We've all heard the admonishment, sort of tongue-in-cheek, serious but not really, that we should avoid having a heart attack on weekends, during holidays, in the middle of the night, the idea being that during those off hours, the care we might receive in an emergency room might not be the best care we could receive. Well, now study results reported in the Journal of the American Heart Association show that, in fact, it's true. Care for those who suffer a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, during the hospital's off hours do not get the same optimal care as those who suffer a heart attack and are transported to the emergency department during the on hours. But, and this is most important, they don't show any greater risk of dying. This was a large and long-term study, almost 63,000 patients in 379 hospitals over a period of more than 5 years. 54% of them arrived at the hospital during off hours. Based on that long-term admonition to avoid the ER during off hours, the results seem to tell us something different. So to explain it to us, we've asked Dr. John McCabe, professor and chair of emergency medicine at SUNY Upstate, to make sense of the results. Good morning, Dr. McCabe.
Good morning.
So are you surprised at the study results?
Not at all.
You aren't?
No.
Tell us why.
Well, first let's say that there are no off hours in the emergency department. We're there 24 hours a day. There's a doctor, there are nurses there. And when you come to the front door, no matter what's wrong with you, no matter who you are, you get taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So off hours has to do with what other doctors, what other services are available. And it's pretty logical to assume that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there are more people and the availability of some services is quicker than at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That makes sense.
So what this study did was it looked at patients who arrived during the day or during the night and said, were they treated the same? And not surprisingly, they were treated just a little bit differently.
Because those same experts weren't there at 2 a.m.
Sure. So the idea, of course, with a heart attack is you have a blood clot in a blood vessel that feeds oxygen and blood to your heart. And you want to open that vessel up. There's two ways. One is give medicines to break up the clot. And the second is go to the catheterization lab and put a balloon in and open it up. Both of those work. So in the middle of the night, you were more likely to get a drug than a balloon.
Okay.
In the daytime, you were more likely to get a balloon than a drug.
I see.
So that's a difference in the treatment, but the treatment differences are small in terms of the outcome. And so in this study, the mortality for patients, that is death from their heart attack, was pretty much exactly the same.
Well, it's interesting because they used the word suboptimal throughout this, meaning I guess it wasn't the best kind of treatment. Are you saying then that the getting the drug is not as good a treatment as the actual physical balloon that goes into a vessel?
Well, the data for that is voluminous, and certainly there are minor, small differences.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say something's suboptimal, something's more optimal. But I guess the question becomes, if it's that much more optimal, then we should see more patients surviving
yes.
with that treatment.
Uh-huh.
And if it's that much more optimal, then the folks who do it ought to be there at 2 o'clock in the morning ready to do it.
You know, and it's interesting you say that, because maybe then the conclusion drawn about what's better and what's not as good, it's a subjective conclusion. It's
There's
not really
certainly
so objective.
A little bit of subjectivity in the eyes of the givers of the treatment, let's
mm-hmm.
say, and we need to be careful and guard against that.
Exactly, because you don't want patients thinking something is less if, in fact, the outcome is just as good.
Correct. And, of course, the other is, even if it were different, what's the message to patients? Have your heart attack in the daytime?
Yeah, like anybody can control that, right?
You can't control that.
Very interesting.
It's also logical. I mean, the variances in how medicine's performed at a big hospital, a small hospital, a rural hospital, middle of the day, middle of the night, there are differences. And when people choose to be one place or another, they accept those differences.
Right. You don't go up to the mountains to spend a long and relaxing weekend expecting to get the same kind of help as if you were in the city in the middle of the day.
Sure. You may get the same help. It may take you a little longer to get to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds a lot, too, your description of how it's taken care of. Is stroke similar? Do you know of any studies that have been done on stroke the same way?
I don't, but I would expect that they're fairly similar. Now, the difference, of course, is that the primary treatment for patients with stroke in the first few hours is the drug therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's easily available any time of day or night in a proper emergency department.
Okay. And that would be true almost anywhere,
sure.
wouldn't it? You wouldn't need those same people to go in with the balloons to do the same thing
Not
for a stroke?
Acutely, no.
Very interesting. What is the standard of care? If I arrive at the hospital having a heart attack, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, what would be, from your perspective, the very best kind of care I could get?
Well, I think the standard of care varies a little bit, and it varies depending on the hospital and the set of emergency physicians and the cardiologists that you're likely to see. Now, in general, if you have a heart attack, someone's going to take you to a catheterization lab and put a balloon in and open up and study your vessels. There are many, many hospitals, though, that don't have a catheterization lab. And so it is perfectly acceptable standard of care treatment to try to open up that clot with the clot-busting drugs. That's what happens every day in thousands of hospitals around the country.
All over the place.
Yes.
How fast does that happen?
Well, the drug's usually administered within 20, 30, 60 minutes in an emergency department, and you begin to see the reperfusion, the opening of the vessels, usually fairly immediately up to 45 or 60 minutes later.
Really? And so if I arrive in the emergency department, I feel like I'm having a heart attack. You decide that's what I'm doing. You give me this drug. An hour later, I'm a lot more comfortable and I'm feeling like I'm going to be okay?
Actually, our goal is to make you more comfortable long before that.
Okay.
So with the drugs and the therapy that we have. And that's true whether you're going to the catheterization lab or we're going to treat you with the clot-busting drugs.
Very interesting. Do you expect that the standard of care will change due to the study? Do you think this study will have an effect on how patients are treated?
I don't think this particular study will, but certainly the standard of care changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When the clot-busting drugs first came out, the standard was really clot-busting drugs, and if they failed, go to the catheterization lab. That's changed over time, and I suspect it will change again.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting conversation. Well, Dr. John McCabe from the emergency department at SUNY Upstate, thanks for coming by, filling us in this morning. It's good to know that no matter when we have a heart attack, we're probably going to be treated just as well.
There are no off times in the ER.
There you go. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. So, dear listeners, last weekend I'm out riding my bike next to the old Erie Canal on the towpath where the donkeys used to pull the barges along. It's beautiful, goes for miles. I'm zipping to make my heart stronger to live a few million beats longer. A couple cyclists ahead take up the whole path, so I yell the customary, "On your left," so they'll move right so I can pass. Guy number one moves left. Guy number two moves right, but then starts weaving all over. Yikes! Being in macho, I'm zipping here mode, I don't stop. I aim for the middle and squeeze between them, growling, "You're supposed to move right, guys." 15 minutes later, I turn around to go home and see them coming in my direction. Guy number two growls, "You're going too fast." My adrenaline surges again, and without thinking, there's the key, guys, thinking, a couple of choice words pop out. A few minutes later, calming down while I recognize the fight-flight impulse that pops up in possible danger situations, I think, "What's wrong with me?" And then, how can I use my head to take charge of this useful as a caveman, but not so useful now, fight-flight thing we have going on? I remembered a Scandinavian study I read a few years ago. It reminded me I have a lot of company. They looked at motor vehicle accidents killing pedestrians on city streets. I don't know if it included just people on foot or bicyclists too, but they found about 9 men to every 1 woman get killed crossing the street. And guess who the drivers were who killed them? Guys again. This time, about 4 or 5 men to every 1 woman behind the wheel. I emailed the researchers about their conclusions the other day. They said first, "This proves that women really are terrible drivers. They can't hit us guys even when we throw ourselves into their path." Second, they suggested I sing this little ditty. "Don't cross in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle of the block. Use your eyes to look up. Use your ears to hear. Walk up to the corner where the coast is clear. And wait until you see the light turn green." Happy Father's Day, my fellow testosterone-laden dummies. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.